after you could digest a little bit the glycogen metabolism, we continue it and we finish with the glycogen storage diseases, which is very easy but very important for you as physicians. All right? So we have here the assigned reading. And to warm you up again, and that is always good, insulin and glucagon are very important players and activate opposite hepatic pathways. Glycolysis, activated by insulin, glucagon activates gluconeogenesis, and glycogen synthesis by insulin and glucagon activates glycogen degradation. So it is very different when we talk about hepatic pathways, whether the individual has just eaten or not, whether the blood glucose levels are high and insulin is ruling, or it is in fasting when the insulin is low and glucagon is ruling. We always have both hormones in the blood. It's not that we have one, not at all. They are both there. And who wins? It's the balance. So we talked about glycolysis and gluconeogenesis, and now we finish up glycogen synthesis and glycogen degradation. And I made a little summary for you, and I have another slide of summary in more detail at the end for self-study. But here I shortly wanted to warm you up again. Liver metabolism after a meal. Glycogen synthesis is active. How does it look at the enzyme level? Glycogen synthase is the regulator's enzyme and is dephosphorylated. Insulin is ruling. Over many phosphorylations with the insulin receptor, eventually the key regulatory enzymes will be dephosphorylated. They are the ones that get phosphorylated by pKa. So glycolysis is active as we want to bring the blood glucose level down. Glucokinase is in the cytosol, has a large capacity, is not glucose-6-phosphate inhibited. PFK is activated by fructose-2,6-bisphosphate, and that is formed with a bifunctional enzyme here with a PFK2 activity. This is important, and otherwise at normal ATP level, the enzyme PFK1 is inhibited. And fructose-2,6-bisphosphate formed by the bifunctional enzyme overcomes that inhibition. And this enzyme is bifunctional, has two not following each other enzyme activities. They have two opposite enzyme activities, and that's very unusual. So we always have to have one active and the other one is inactive. And in the dephosphorylated form, insulin ruling, we want to run glycolysis to bring the blood glucose levels down. And pyruvate kinase is dephosphorylated. It's only the pyruvate kinase in the liver that has a phosphorylation site. Gluconeogenesis is inhibited, and the regulated enzyme for short-term regulated is fructose-1,6-bisphosphatase, the enzyme that does the opposite reaction like PFK1, and this enzyme is now inhibited by fructose-2,6-bisphosphate. So you see, if the bifunctional enzyme forms fructose-2,6-bisphosphate, some molecules go over and overcome the ATP inhibition of PFK1. Some molecules go directly to fructose-1,6-bisphosphatase and inhibit it. Are you with me so far? Now it changes when we have liver metabolism during fasting. Now glycogen degradation is active, and which enzyme does the glycogen degradation and forms glucose-1-phosphate, that is glycogen phosphorylase. And that enzyme will be phosphorylated. When we start out here, I always put the glycogen still in. But as you will see in the clicker question later, I take the glycogen out, as I do not know whether they are so nice and do that in the USMLE. So glycogen phosphorylase is sometimes only referred to as phosphorylase. Yeah? So here, This is phosphorylated and active. Glycolysis should be inhibited, as what do you do at the same time in the liver? Glycogen degradation from here down and gluconeogenesis. That is important. We are not following glycogen degradation with glycolysis. That wouldn't make any sense. The purpose is to release glucose into the blood. So glycolysis should be inhibited. Glucokinase is in the nucleus. PFK1 is inhibited by ATP. And I just want to point that out. Sometimes I'm asked, in fasting, the liver always has enough ATP. It's not that the ATP level is low in fasting. The liver does beta oxidation of fatty acids, then it has always enough ATP, unless something is wrong with it. So PFK1 is inhibited by normal ATP levels, as what happens now, I phosphorylated with PKA here. This is the phosphate, the bifunctional enzyme. And with that, the bisphosphatase 2 is active and cleaves fructose 2,6 bisphosphate. So this molecule is not there to activate PFK1. And pyruvate kinase gets phosphorylated directly by PKA, protein kinase A. And as we want, gluconeogenesis should be active. Pyruvate carboxylase is activated. Acetyl-CoA formed in this case from beta oxidation. Pep carboxykinase has oxaloacetate as substrate in the cytosol, and fructose 1,6 bisphosphatase, the regulated enzyme of gluconeogenesis, is not inhibited by fructose 2,6 bisphosphate as I cleaved it. Are you with me so far? This is a short, big picture. And let's look now at glycogen degradation. And we talked mostly about phosphorylations. Now let's look at activation by calcium. Glycogen phosphorylase kinase, a kinase, an enzyme that phosphorylates only phosphorylase, only glycogen phosphorylase. This enzyme has subunits, and some subunits are phosphorylated, gamma subunits have the catalytic activity, and we focus on the delta subunits. And these delta subunits in the molecule act as calmodulin. Calmodulin, calcium modulation. Calmodulin is a protein that can bind 4 calcium ions. And it can be free, like here in this cartoon, and it makes a conformational change and sometimes wraps itself around a protein, or it can be in a subunit. And if it is in the subunit of glycogen phosphorylase kinase, it can bind the calcium ions, and the enzyme makes a conformational change and is now activated without being phosphorylated. Where does that take case? In the muscle all the time during muscle contraction, and the liver when we use the calcium ion messenger system or the phosphoinositide messenger system. All right. When we talk about glycogen degradation, glycogen synthesis, and especially the degradation, we have to differentiate the muscle and the liver. So we talked already about the liver. Now let's look at the muscle. During muscle contraction, we have calcium ions, and independent of the hormones. Yeah, we don't need the phosphoinositide messenger system like we could use in the liver. But mostly in the liver, they respond to the cyclic AMP messenger system with epinephrine. So muscle contraction generates calcium ions and AMP. Now, they are both allosteric activators of muscle glycogen degradation. So you have here the calcium ions. We said already, glycogen phosphorylase kinase has calmodulin subunits, and these calcium ions bind to those calmodulin subunits, And the enzyme makes a conformational change and gets active. Some people say it's partially active. As you will see, once we have flight and fight situation, we can even make it more active. But it is active now, good enough to do what it is supposed to do, to phosphorylate glycogen phosphorylase. So I have here the calcium ions released during muscle contraction. You have glycogen phosphorylase kinase is active, and it phosphorylates glycogen phosphorylase. And glycogen phosphorylase is phosphorylated and active. That's what we want. But I said it's not only calcium ions that have allosteric regulation, also AMP. And AMP activates the dephosphorylated glycogen phosphorylase. This looks complicated. Once you read it, it's not that complicated. So we have glycogen phosphorylase kinase can be activated by phosphorylation, can be activated by calcium ions. And then phosphorylase, glycogen phosphorylase, can be activated by phosphorylation. And only the isoform in the muscle can be allosterically activated by AMP. So that would not happen in the liver. That is only for the muscle. As why? Why would we do that? If I have muscle contraction, I want to make glycogen degradation, I want to make glycolysis, I want to have ATP for my muscle contraction, independent whether there's flight and fight situation. I want to move my arm like this without being chased by an elephant. Although I could say it would be fun, right? So, no, not for me though, for you watching it. All right, so the story is that glycogen phosphorylase is now both forms, the one that is phosphorylated and the one that is not phosphorylated, they are both active, and we can fantastically degrade glycogen. Now this changes even if epinephrine optimizes this muscle glycogen degradation. If you are chased, then even if you have nice ATP from, you want an extra output, and you want it absolutely perfect. So here, protein kinase A from epinephrine cyclic AMP messenger system, that phosphorylates glycogen phosphorylase kinase. You remember that enzyme could not directly phosphorylate glycogen phosphorylase. I played it here. I said I would like to phosphorylate glycogen phosphorylase, but I cannot reach it. I cannot recognize that phosphorylation site. But I can phosphorylate glycogen phosphorylase kinase, and that will then do the job and phosphorylate the other enzyme. So here, as you have also calcium definitely already when you run muscle contraction, now both forms of glycogen phosphorylase are fully active, and they do what they have to do. They phosphorylate glycogen phosphorylase, and that was also activated allosterically by AMP. So you see, and I put this out in here again, epinephrine optimizes muscle glycogen degradation, but it is not needed for the normal degradation of glycogen in the muscle, but it makes it even more efficient. I always give you the text. I'm not reading it to you. I just told you the story. So if you want to pre-read, I have it here again in written form. And I want shortly to go to a summary. Covalent modification of key enzymes and glycogen metabolism and possible allosteric regulations. That is all a little bit over there, and it is good for you to bring it together, and in helping you, I brought it together. So we have first glycogen synthase. That's the regulated enzyme for glycogen synthesis. It's active when it's dephosphorylated, and it's inactivated by pKa, and that happens both in liver and muscle. Glycogen synthase can also be allosterically activated by glucose 6-phosphate when we have a lot of glucose, And that also happens both in liver and muscle. Now, glycogen phosphorylase kinase is activated by phosphorylation by PKA. That is the one that could be phosphorylated by protein kinase A. And this activation is always needed in the liver. In the muscle, it's not always needed, only during flight and fight situation. As in the muscle, it is allosterically activated by calcium, and that mostly is good enough. So the dephosphorylated form is activated by calcium in muscle always during muscle contraction, in the liver only when we have calcium ion messenger system going on. And that is not that common. Finally, glycogen phosphorylase. Why is this enzyme called phosphorylase? Does it cleave a phosphate? Does phosphorylase cleave a phosphate? No. It is phosphorolytical cleavage using inorganic phosphate. How do you call an enzyme that cleaves a phosphate? A phosphatase. Yeah, so we have a kinase, an enzyme that puts a phosphate in using ATP. Then we have a phosphatase, protein phosphatase, that takes a phosphate away. And if it is protein phosphatase 1 activated by insulin, make sure that that phosphate that was put in there by PKA is away. And then we have a phosphorylase. Instead of water, we use inorganic phosphate. And what does glycogen phosphorylase form? Glucose 6 or glucose 1? Glucose 1 phosphate. And how do you get now to glucose 6 phosphate? With phosphoglucomutase. Do you need ATP to do so? No. All righty, very good. And glycogen phosphorylase is activated in its phosphorylated form, and it's allosterically inactivated by glucose 6 phosphate and ATP, also both in liver and muscle, and now only for the liver by free glucose. And only in the muscle it is activated by AMP, glycogen phosphorylase isoform in the muscle. So you see it's pretty clear cut out how you regulate glycogen metabolism, and you have to differentiate between liver and muscle. So I made this cartoon as it's always mixed up, different pathways combination in the liver. If I have glycogen degradation, and I put it here glycogenolysis, some people write these in questions. So that is glycogen degradation. And gluconeogenesis take place at the same time, and you release glucose into the blood. In the muscle, you have glycogenolysis, and you don't have... Which enzyme is needed to release free glucose? Glucose 6 phosphatase. And you find that in liver and kidney, and that is bound in the ER and cleaves the glucose 6 phosphate to free glucose. The muscle doesn't have it. And the muscle uses the glucose 6 phosphate for glycolysis and makes ATP. Yeah? Are you with me so far? Once you look at these two cartoons, then you know which pathways happen at the same time. And now we have a clicker question. Feel free to talk to each other. All right. All right. So we have the choices. Which is enzyme is allosterically activated by AMP in his skeletal muscle? Well, phosphorylase kinase and... Oops. This is wrong. Okay. The correct answer is phosphorylase. Somehow in this part, it's not correct. So phosphorylase kinase is allosterically activated by what? Calcium. And phosphorylase is allosterically activated by AMP. Yeah? So let me just see that I make sure that this is the correct answer, phosphorylase. All right, I'm sorry, I will check that. ATP generation in muscle by anaerobic glycolysis now. Glycogen degradation forms glucose 1-phosphate without ATP usage. And then we have phosphoglucomutase that doesn't use any ATP. And we form 3-ATP as overall in anaerobic glycolysis, yeah, as we are saving the first one. Now, I'm always asked, how is the ATP generation? And it's not in the objectives. And I only put that in for whoever is interested in going through the how much the ATP is formed. Yeah. So this is not objective of this lecture. I'm always asked, and I thought, well, why not put it in if there is interest for that? What I want you to understand is that if you go to the glycogen degradation, and you have already glucose 1-phosphate, you save an ATP for your anaerobic glycolysis if you are in the muscle. All right, glycogen storage diseases. I have here the types, the naming, and the enzyme deficiency. And you can learn this like a vocabulary. As future physicians, you will deal with these. And the types, the numbering from 1 starts, has to do with the time when the disease was declared. So Dr. von Gierke found the first glycogen storage disease, and that is why it's sometimes also referred to as glycogen storage disease 1. And then Dr. Pompei, he was following and found the disease where the lysosomal alpha-glucosidase or acid maltase is deficient. So I want you to realize that these were all scientists and medicine in the past that was also very going. Many medical physicians were scientifically oriented and found these diseases. Enzyme deficiencies, you have to know them. Sometimes in exam questions, you could it could just be described as deficiency of the branching enzyme. And then you have to know, okay, this is Andersen disease. How does the patient look for, or so forth? All right, now let's start. Von Gierke disease, type 1. And you see here, I have the kidney and the liver. And Dr. von Gierke found this disease in his first patients after autopsy. So that kind of tells you if that is not treated, is it's a very deadly disease, as it leads to severe hypoglycemia. And he found high levels of glycogen in liver and kidney, but the glycogen had normal structure, but high levels of liver and kidney. Now, I saw that in the first aid to the board, they forget the kidney. But that is the key marker for von Gierke. you have high glycogen in liver and in kidney with normal structure. Normally you have high glycogen in also you have your most of your glycogen storage is in the liver, and the kidney doesn't have much. But when the kidney tries to do gluconeogenesis and cannot release free glucose, as it has a deficiency in glucose-6-phosphate, then this glucose-6-phosphate allosterically activates glycogen synthesis in the kidney. And that's how you end up also in the kidney with these high abnormal glycogen. So you see here, when you just look at the liver alone, how severe the hypoglycemia can be if you cannot release glucose into the blood. You cannot efficiently degrade your glycogen. You get stuck with glucose-6-phosphate, which allosterically activates synthesis, which is not supposed to be. And gluconeogenesis, you can come to glucose-6-phosphate and you cannot cleave it to free glucose. So you have the clinical features is hepatonephromegaly. Very, very severe fasting hypoglycemia, and that's where the first patient passed away from. You have lactic acidemia. Why would you have lactic acidemia? Lactate is always used for gluconeogenesis. So if you want to do gluconeogenesis, it only goes in that direction of gluconeogenesis when you release the glucose. Yeah, we said gluconeogenesis and glycolysis have reversible reactions, and it always depends in which direction you go. And if you want to use lactate and you never can make free glucose, it gets stuck in the middle. And you cannot use the lactate as you normally use for gluconeogenesis. Lactate from the blood is always picked up by the liver and by the heart. And if it is too much, then the heart cannot compensate. And we have lactic acidemia in von Gierke disease. You have hyperuricemia, emia again in the blood, uric acid. That has to do that under normal conditions, you don't have much lactate in the blood. And the lactate has a transporter in the kidney to get that competes if you have high uric acid levels. So under, if you have high lactate levels, they have the same transporter to get rid of. And if you have no high lactate levels, then your uric acid doesn't have the availability to be excreted as normally, and you can have high uric acid levels in the liver, in the blood. You have hyperlipidemia that is mostly resulting that if you have severe fasting, you don't have much insulin. And once we talk about lipoproteins, or actually we did, right? Then you need insulin to activate lipoprotein lipase to take care of triacylglycerols and VLDLs. And that is not working well. So you have hypertriacylglycerolemia. And you have progressive renal disease. The treatment is possible. You can use uncooked cornstarch, which has a very, very slow digestion. Or you have gastric glucose infusion at night. What you have to do is you have to prevent that the patients encounter fasting metabolism. That's their problem, the fasting metabolism, when they are supposed to release glucose into the blood and they cannot do that. Then we have two subtypes, type 2A, there is the enzyme glucose-6-phosphatase deficient. And in type 1B, you have the transport of glucose-6-phosphate into the ER is deficient. So that is a subtype. The story was you make glucose-6-phosphate and glucose-6-phosphatase sits there bound in the ER. So you have a transporter system to bring this glucose-6-phosphate into the ER. There the enzyme cleaves it And then you have a glucose transporter that brings those free glucose out. Then it's in the cytosol, and then it will leave via GLUT2 into the blood. Pompe disease is deficiency of acid maltase. It's in lysosomal disease or lysosomal alpha-1-4 glucosidase. And this lysosomal glycogen accumulates in heart, muscle, and liver, and these lysosomes can also rupture. And glycogen, most major muscle groups, it affects very strongly the heart, in the cardiac muscle, in the infantile form. You have an infantile, very severe form that very often leads to death in early childhood and then a later onset. This disease can be different grouped as glycogen storage disease, as lysosomal storage disease, or as muscular disease. So I would really, in your case, start a file with these diseases. And on the computer, it's so easy. And then whenever you go to your other classes, add to it. And definitely, these diseases are important for you as future physicians. Pompe disease, the infantile form is the most severe, and I put here the heart. You have massive cardiomegaly. And here, as you see with this child, you have myopathy, hypotonia. You also have hepatomegaly, but weakness. And the cytosolic amount of glycogen is normal, normal structure, normal blood glucose levels. But the infantile form can be so serious due to heart failure. The late onset is mostly breathing problems. But if you have this described heart disease, heart failure, cardiomegaly, Pompe disease is very, very common, the reason. And there is now enzyme replacement therapy by infusion, but that is not an easy treatment either. All right, now how come that this glycogen accumulates, or some glycogen accumulates in lysosomes? We have glycogen phosphorylase in the cytosol, and I said, for we didn't know that unless we found the Pompe disease, that some of the glycogen is by accident, you might say, it is captured in autophagosomes and delivered to the lysosomes. And that is normally not a problem. We have the acid maltase there, cleaves it, and the free glucose is released. So it's not a problem normally, but in Pompe disease it is. You have here the lysosomes filled with glycogen in that disease. Corey disease is type 3, has also the names Forbes disease or limit dextrinosis. These couple, Carl and Gertie Corey, they got the Nobel Prize. I'm not testing the Nobel Prize when it was or when it was found. I only want you to get a feeling for the typing, type 1, type 2, type 3, and how this came together. And Corey's cycle, we talked about it. So they were very, very active as physicians and scientists at that time. So here you have the deficient of the debranching enzyme. And if you cannot debranch, you have limit dextrin here. We talked about limit dextrin, the short branches here. And that's why this disease is all called limit dextrinosis. And Dr. Forbes also worked on it, but Corey disease is named after Corey's. So what do you have? You have an abnormal glycogen structure with short outer branches. If you prepare here now again for, you have all these diseases, it's similar like you have a pathway. Chop it apart and anticipate questions. Yeah, if you have this abnormal structure, okay, no. All right, how does it look like? What's the disease? Which enzyme is deficient? And so forth. Yeah, we have two with abnormal structure. And then we will see some have only the isozymes in the muscle is not working, or isozyme in the liver is not working. So it might be a good idea to put it apart that way. Chorea disease characteristics, you have muscular weakness, hypotonia, also cardiomyopathy, mild hypoglycemia. Mild hypoglycemia. Did you have mild hypoglycemia in Pompe disease? No. See, that's the difference. So try to compare. In Pompe disease, you had normal blood glucose levels. Here you have mild hypoglycemia, hepatomegaly, and it is considered a muscular dystrophy. That is important for you as a physician. When you see a patient with Chorea disease, you can educate your patient as they are supported by the Muscular Dystrophy Society in the U.S. So they can be helped and they might get a wheelchair. So you can reach out and make sure that this patient is helped by the Muscular Dystrophy Society. Then we have Andersen's disease. That's the second one with the abnormal structure. And Dr. Andersen found a young child and this had Andersen's disease, and she described familial cirrhosis. Existing already with that little child is cirrhosis. That was really unheard of. Yeah? Cirrhosis develops mostly in adults over time, and here the child had it. And she found that she had abnormal glycogen synthesis and glycogen structure, and the enzyme that is deficient is glycogen branching enzyme. So when you come to the glycogen branching enzyme and this is not working as well, then you have these long glucose chains and less branches. Now when I remember these names, I always have to help myself a little bit, as there is no logic in it. It's the name of Dr. Andersen, right? So how can you bring Dr. Andersen to glycogen branching enzyme? And I do it Andersen branching enzyme. Yeah. So you will not forget that, and I have some other tricks. So it is okay to do that, as it has nothing to do with understanding. It has to do with memorization. And if you find ways to memorize it, then all the best. So Andersen disease, clinical feature, have a large variety in severity. Muscle weakness, hypotonia, cardiomyopathy, enlarged liver, and the key word, infantile cirrhosis. And you have liver failure and very often early death in childhood. And the abnormal glycogen structure, and you have to describe it, these long, not many branches, these long glucose filaments, they are attacked by the immune system. The patient's immune system realizes something wrong here. It's kind of funny thing, and it also has to do with different solubility, and it leads to hepatic scarring and cirrhosis. Yeah, so that is in Andersen's disease. We work ourselves to type 5, Dr. McArdle syndrome, and here McArdle, like M, muscle. McArdle, muscle. Only in the muscle, not in the liver. And the enzyme that is deficient is the isoform of glycogen phosphorylase that is formed in the muscle. So you would have high levels of glycogen with normal structure. Whenever you have an abnormal structure, something is wrong with the branching or the debranching enzyme. Then you have an abnormal structure. Here you have normal structure, but high levels, as you cannot degrade as much as normal. Now, this is very likely even more common than we think, as it's often not diagnosed, as the children are tired, unmotivated, and they cannot do very well physical activity. And if you force a child, then you can really hurt it, as it can then lead to rhabdomyolysis. And you would also measure CKMM due to muscle damage in the blood. So the clinical features are temporary weakness and muscle cramping after exercise, and also myoglobinemia and myoglobinuria. Now, if you have that, and as a physician think it could be McArdle syndrome, you can make a muscle weakness test. And you see here, we have under normal conditions, when you have muscle contraction, you come into anaerobic glycolysis, and the lactate would increase. In McArdle's disease, you don't find that, as you cannot access as much glycogen degradation. That is a very easy test to do, as you are measuring the blood levels. You are not making biopsies. You are just seeing, is it a problem in glycogen degradation? If you have muscle weakness, that could be due to lack of ATP due to glycogen metabolism, or, which you will learn too, fatty acid degradation, carnitine shuttle deficiency. You will learn that. So as a physician, you want to know, okay, something wrong with glycogen or fatty acid metabolism. And this is an easy test. If the lactate does not show up like in a normal individual, then it's the indication of McArdle syndrome. Are you with me so far? HERS disease, now don't laugh. HERS is a disease in the liver. Yeah? HERS liver, you will not forget it. Yeah? Muscle McArdle, Anderson branching, HERS liver, only in the liver. If you have other good ideas, email me. I'm collecting that. I bet other students would like to do that too. As again, it is okay to make those things. Yeah. So here what you have to know is that it is only the hepatic, only the liver glycogen phosphorylase. We have hepatomegaly, growth retardation, and mild fasting hypoglycemia. Last but not least, we have Tarui disease, and we don't have many patients of that. I don't know how many we have now, maybe 10 or I don't know, worldwide. It's a very, very rare disease. But it always offers itself for good questions. Yeah? Sometimes you have rare disease that shows up and is tested. Now, if you have a patient with Tarui disease comes in, it looks like McArdle syndrome. It looks like McArdle, and McArdle is much more common, yeah, as muscle weakness. And however, in Tarui disease, there's nothing wrong with glycogen degradation, although it is grouped as a glycogen storage disease, it's something wrong with glycolysis. And the glycolysis PFK1 in muscle, RBC, and liver have different subtypes. PFK1 in muscle of the MM type. RBC has one subunit from the muscle and one from the liver. And the liver isozyme LL type is normal. So here I have an unusual case that my phosphofructokinase is not working well. And I have reduced activity. It still works, but it's reduced activity. And as I have these M isoform also in RBCs, I have mild hemolysis. And that is the key for Tarui. You would not have hemolysis in McArdle. In McArdle, to make that clear again, it's the muscle glycogen phosphorylase isoform that doesn't work well. And that's why you come into muscle weakness. Here it is the glycolysis enzyme that does not very well, the isoform of PFK1. And another part that would not show up in McArdle is the hemolysis. All right, let's see how this clicker question comes. All right, so let's see how you can tackle that question. Deficiency of glucose 6-phosphatase, what disease is that? Which disease? Von Gierke disease. How does the patient look like? Do you have mild hypoglycemia, severe hypoglycemia? Severe hypoglycemia. Do you have an enlarged liver? Yes. Do you have an enlarged kidney? Yes. And how does the glycogen store glycogen look? It is normal or abnormal? It's normal, right? We have two abnormal glycogen storage diseases when something is wrong with the branching or the debranching. Von Gierke disease, high glycogen store, normal, and both in liver and in kidney. And I said the kidney might not be there, but it is important. Okay, so infantile liver cirrhosis, which disease is that? What would lead to liver cirrhosis when the immune system attacks it? Abnormal structure, long branches, Anderson disease, right? Mostly limit dextrin and the cytosol of liver. Limit dextrinosis, also an abnormal structure, short branches. Cori disease, glycogen granules and lysosomes, Pompe disease, increased, and that is abnormality. What you would find there is, if it's the infantile form, cardiac death due to cardiac enlargement, then increased glycogen in liver and kidney, and abnormal glycogen structure in liver and kidney. All right, increased glycogen with normal structure in liver and kidney. Okay. All right. What I want to show here so that you have it when you go to the video here is I made you a table. And when you cannot sleep at night, believe me, once you are half through, you are deeply asleep. So don't do that before an exam or have at least somebody wake you up. All right, so this is good for you also to get used to organize the material. Then you have here in your book the flow chart. It's very good also to make sure that you know where you are, get the big picture. And here I have what I showed you in the beginning in more detail for self-study. I'm not reading it to you, but I think it helps and it brings everything together, as I want you to have a big picture and see how these pathways fit into the human being. And here in fasting And here are the objectives again. I always write them out as well. You have them in the QR coding, but also here as well. And go through the lecture now and read this, and then tell yourself, what do I remember? And then look it up again as an open book. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.